Welcome to Base Camp for Men. I'm your host, Tony Rezac. This is the show that gives you insights and resources on how to live a more courageous life. We'll be looking at men, the current state of masculinity, and how to create a more inspiring narrative for all men. Welcome, and let's get started. Hello, Base Campers. I hope you're all doing well. One of the sources of wisdom for humanity throughout the ages come out of the mystic tradition or mysticism, and I prefer to use this term broadly to capture all the ways that my fellow humans access divine wisdom. And it's interesting to note that wisdom is not faithful to just one tradition. You see her all over the world wearing many different garments. Her primary purpose seems to be to help humanity navigate the storms that attempt to unmoor us from true north, which brings us to today's topic. I used to keep all the extraterrestrial stuff, the crop circles and the channelings and all the crazy accurate psychic abilities and predictions, as something separate from what I had previously thought of as the mystic's way. Now I see that it was wisdom herself wearing yet another garment and whispering that it is time for this information. I don't pretend to know just how the ET topic hits the shores of everyone's awareness or even how it is for you. I only know that for brave souls like my guest today who have led the way, I am grateful beyond words for blazing a trail that so many of us are now rapidly moving along. The acceleration of the evolution of human consciousness, what my guest today calls exoconscious humans, is a very compelling idea. And this exoconscious branch of the wisdom tree has grown up in the shadows, being seen as too far out there to explore for most people. But destiny has caught up with this tribe, who are now being seen as a courageous band of futurists who have been prepping our tribe for years. Enjoy the interview. Today's episode is brought to you by Stand Up Now Apparel. Stand Up Now has amazing designs centered on God, family, freedom, and patriotism. They use only the softest cotton in their designs and have gear for the whole family. There's something for everyone, base campers. I know you're going to love their products. Go support them at www.standupnowapparel.com and use the code BASECAMP to receive a 10% discount and free shipping. And now, on to our interview. My guest today is Dr. Rebecca Hardcastle Wright, a Phoenix-based futurist, author, coach, and host of Exoconscious Humans YouTube. She's also the founder of the Institute for Exoconsciousness, which is the first post-disclosure organization to support co-creation between natural human and off-planet intelligences. Rebecca also developed the word exoconsciousness, now in mainstream use, to describe the innate human abilities to connect, communicate, and co-create with ET, multidimensional, and spiritual beings that link us directly to the cosmos. Here is my interview with Rebecca Hardcastle Wright. All right, I am here with Rebecca Hardcastle Wright, author and mystic, thought leader and teacher, Rebecca Hardcastle Wright. Rebecca, welcome to Base Camp for Men. It is great to have you on the show.
Thank you, Tony. Thank you for the invitation.
Absolutely. Your name is kind of a mouthful to introduce you twice or three times. It's like I got to try not to trip over my tongue.
Names.
Yeah, totally. Well, you know, I just loved your two books. You wrote Exoconsciousness, Your 21st Century Mind, which is the older of the two books. And then the newer book is Exoconscious Humans, Will Free Will Survive in an Increasingly Non-Human World? Very relevant, very timely, and very visionary, and I just really enjoyed, I enjoyed both. I think I enjoyed the newer one more. I felt like it was really resonating with the things that we're wrestling with. So great job on that, by the way. I think people are going to be reading it for a long, long time to try to get their minds around this kind of polarity that we're talking about. But I guess just to start off, Rebecca, where are you from? Just give us a little background. Where are you from? Where do you live now? How did you first get interested in exoconsciousness, or I guess you could even just say ETs, extraterrestrials, and then when did that become really kind of your life's work or your life's calling?
Okay, I was born in a small, I guess, not really a town, a small city in West Virginia, in central West Virginia called Clarksburg.
Okay.
And I spent much of my life there. It was kind of an idyllic kind of Mayberry type of community. So I was really allowed a lot of freedom, run out the front door or the side door first thing in the morning. I was outside a lot and played a lot and just into creative kid play time. And I'm a childhood experiencer. And many of my experiences came during those childhood explorations. My first actual memory of contact was around 3 years old. Mm-hmm. That's very common for a childhood experiencer, 3 years old. Some people I work with are what's called crib contactees. Some people are contactees. They're aware of before they came in, pre-birth. But I'm a childhood contactee. I lived on Carrsburg was a mining town. So the land was very porous, a lot of Irish Celtic people there, a lot of, I guess you would describe it as, mountain people that left Virginia and settled over in West Virginia. It was actually created during the Civil War to pay off the war debt. And it's really interesting history. But my initial experiences were not only with extraterrestrials in my bedroom, outside when I was playing, but also at night they would come into my room also. So there was kind of those different dimensions of my life. And then, so I was taken aboard craft and I had a whole childhood of that. And then I was also taken below the ground and taken down into, I guess you would call it the underworld, the dimension beneath the earth. And maybe that's because West Virginia was so porous. I don't know, but that was just my childhood experience, my everyday common childhood experience. And it's funny because that happened to me. And it was really until I was an adult, I was sitting on a porch in Phoenix, Arizona, and a little town called Fountain Hills. And I was reading this book on shamanism. And I'm like, oh my golly, like I was doing shamanic work in a sense when I was just a child. So moved around a little bit in West Virginia. Then I moved to Dayton, Ohio, and lived there much of my childhood, much of my high school, during my high school years. Ironically, my father was a pastor, and he was pastor at a German-speaking church. So it was Evangelical United Brethren, became Methodist Church, and they had services actually in German. And then again, later on when I'm an adult, I'm reading into Project Paperclip. I'm reading into Wright-Patterson Air Force Base there in Dayton, Ohio. And I'm like, oh, we're around so many inventors and engineers. That was just everyday commonplace there. There must have been some kind of a geomagnetic vortex there. The Manhattan Project was up the street from my house where I lived for a time in Dayton. they did the starter for the bomb. It's just a really interesting place.
Yeah.
And then I left there and I went to college, and then I studied for a while in Europe. I studied in Basel, Switzerland, right there at the kind of convergence of Switzerland where I live. And then there was Germany and France. So you could take one tram and end up in Germany and another tram and end up in France. It was, really quite interesting, but it was a German speaking area. I studied continental philosophy there. Mm-hmm. And that's very, I guess throughout my education, I always veered toward philosophy, theology, asking big questions, looking for, a broad, expansive viewpoint of Eastern and Western thought. Mm-hmm. And then I went to Boston University School of Theology and got my master's in divinity, and was a chaplain at Wright State University, right next door to Wright-Patterson.
Really?
So lots of, coming back around, what's going on there.
A lot of synchronicity. One thing I wanted to ask you, when you had the childhood contactee experience, did you just keep it to yourself? Like, were you, when you got older, like, so you went to university, were you starting to find people that were maybe wanting to talk about it a little bit? Or is this just kind of like, I'm just going to keep this to myself because I realize this is very, very esoteric, or people are going to look at me a certain way? Or were you already, even as maybe a university professor and stuff, were you starting to find clues to maybe people that had kind of had some of the same experiences as you? And as you've worked with people that have had these childhood experiences, was West Virginia kind of a hotbed, or was it, it's so global that it's really spread out? I guess I'm giving you, four questions in one, but
right.
I guess, were you comfortable talking about your experience. What was the, how old were you when that happened, I guess, is the way to ask you.
When I first started to be more vocal about what was going on.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably early in childhood. But later childhood, because things would happen at night and I wouldn't understand what they were. I'd get afraid. Yeah. But yeah, early childhood is rather seamless. I know I used to teach childhood development. It's kind of seamless. And somebody said to me one day, we were talking, and I think it was Bob Davis. I don't know if you know Bob Davis, but he's a neuro, kind of into neuroscience and the paranormal. And we were talking and he said to me, oh, well, you've never known anything different.
Right.
You're talking about contactees. I'm like, I've never known anything different. So it was, I guess I kind of grew in, I guess I would say I grew and my development grew into that and with that.
Yeah.
And it was really, Tony, not until I moved to Phoenix, Arizona. We moved here in 92. Did I really begin to just by happenstance move to Fountain Hills? And I'm not there a week or so, and somebody comes up to me and they say, oh, you need to meet Ruth Hover. And I'm like, oh, okay. And, you know, I meet her almost immediately. And turns out she's organizing and facilitating one of the longest running extraterrestrial experiencer groups in the nation at that point.
Really?
So she was working with John Mack at Harvard. Yep. And also Leo Sprinkle at University of Wyoming. I don't know if your listeners are familiar with Leo, but the three of them were putting together how we work with experiencers, how we, one of the first things that John Mack did was to, you know, put them through a battery of tests and determine that, you know, they're really quite sane, really quite normal. Mm-hmm. And Kenneth Ring did a lot of work. If your listeners are familiar with the Omega Project, Kenneth Ring, that's an excellent research book also. Mm-hmm. But that was my first adult conversation about beings. You know, I certainly read books in college that were interesting, but nobody as such was really talking much about it until really mid-adulthood. And then I had a series of very dramatic revisiting of my childhood experiences, which was a very interesting thing. And I'll just give you an example of what happened to me. So I'm in bed, and about 2 o'clock every morning, these orbs would wake me up. They would scream, kind of like the dolphin screaming, that high-pitched squeal. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they would fly by my ears and wake me up. And I would like startle awake. And then I'd lie in bed and these 3D images would come down out of my ceiling. And the message was, you are to remember all of this that you were taught. And so there was just a very dramatic revisiting during that whole time, lots of extremely high paranormal time, lots of visitation. And Dr. Hover had an amazing library. I mean, it was 3 books deep. What the point I just want to say, I was divorced at this point. So, I mean, I've been raising 3 kids alone by myself. And I don't have any money for books. And she was so generous with me with all the books in the library that she had. And so the whole term of exoconsciousness, it came during this very high engagement time. And I had 3 kids, and there was a lot going on in my life at that time, not only intellectually, career-wise, but in terms of paranormal activity and knowledge. I was getting a lot of downloads at that period. And one morning, I had one of those radio alarms, and my radio alarm went off. And I remember distinctly, I rolled over and I hit the button. And I'm like, I just need 5 more minutes to sleep before I get up, make lunches, go to work, get the kids to school. You know, I need to do this. My head fell back on the pillow, and the word exoconsciousness came not in my head. It went down through my body.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, that there's a biblical verse that said, and the word became flesh and dwelt among us. Well, I would say the word became my flesh and dwelt in my life.
Yeah.
And I knew from that point on, like this was going to be my work, was to really work on myself and to gather with other people and to really begin to define and construct the whole concept of exoconsciousness as a subjective experience, as well as the objective science of it.
Yeah, I guess that's the question I wanted to ask you. So, you know, my listeners, my show isn't really steeped in these topics. I've been touching on them periodically, and they know, you know, I've talked about my own experience with crop circles, and then I had a resonance with Pleiadians through my Native American bloodline. But exoconsciousness is a brand new, like everybody's going to be going, what is it? So I guess that's my first question really to you, or my next question is, how do you define it? Like what does exoconsciousness encapsulate? And is it one and the same with things like telepathy and clairvoyance, or do they go hand in hand? How does it, I kind of intuitively get that they could be closely related, but not necessarily. And I wanted to give you a chance to expand, like what is exoconsciousness exactly in your view?
So now we define exoconsciousness as the innate human. So every human has it. It's not a superpower. We're not special, you know.
Right.
It's an innate human ability to connect, communicate, and co-create with extraterrestrials, multidimensionals, and spiritual beings. So some of the people I work with, they see Jesus, they see Mary, they see Buddha. You know, there's a lot of spiritual phenomenon. And in terms of the psychic ability, so what we deal a lot with is, you know, what is our psychic intelligence? Like, how do we solve problems with our psychic ability? Mm-hmm. How do we use our intuition? How do we telepathically communicate with each other? What happens when we go out of body, you know, or we're bilocating? What does that all mean? So that's very, very, that's kind of the linchpin of exoconsciousness, are all of those psychic abilities. And I would add that a very important component also is that people begin to integrate. So they integrate their experiences. So instead of just being quiet about it, not sharing it, being confused about it, maybe being embarrassed by it, yeah, that they begin to speak openly and begin to integrate it psychologically and emotionally, importantly, emotionally and spiritually.
I like what you said earlier when you said you were going through an acceleration and you were having a lot of downloads. I've had that experience myself where my intuition, my psychic abilities seem to be getting sharper, but I'm also receiving lots of information, imagery, synchronicity, numbers, lots of things happening. And it feels like I'm, especially when I'm ready for it, when I've integrated maybe the last batch of downloads of information that I'm to kind of make sense of and maybe even do a podcast about, I feel ready, like I've got bandwidth. And then often there will be another, or I'll even ask for another bit of, you know, another chunk of information about what's happening. How can I assist humanity? What are the conversations that we need to be having as humans right now? And I think this is kind of one of the really important areas. I'm so glad you broadened it, that it can include extraterrestrial contact or communication, but it can also be broadly mystic. It can include Jesus or any other ascended masters and other dimensions. I think that's a really great way of putting it, because it allows multiple entry points for people. Do you know what I mean? So, because a lot of people might go like, oh, ETs, he's doing the ET thing again. I don't know what that has to do with me. But when you include all of the other ways that mystics and humans can, what was the term used about something about something human ability?
Innate.
Innate human. Yeah, I love that. I'm going to start using that. It's really great. But great job. I just think that really invites people to play with this concept, because to me, there's always been a little bit of a fetish for a lot of humans, myself included, around talking about ETs. It was like we kind of felt it and we understood it and knew it. But we were like a little afraid to be like, I don't want everybody saying that I'm way out in left field. But when you include it in the larger mystic field of humanity, I think it makes it much more accessible and much more people can get their head around it. And if the ET thing is there, you know, in the shadows for people, then that'll come out in due time, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. A very fulfilling thing for me was, I was putting together a PowerPoint the other day, and I just thought, oh, I'll just see if exoconsciousness is like in any dictionaries, and it's in 5 online dictionaries now.
Really?
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. No,
you created a word that everybody's talking about.
Yeah. And it's and you know, I like how you express that time of that phenomenon and downloads and integrating. I kind of look at it like, do you ever look at those stock market charts where they have the spikes go up and then they go down a little bit and then they go up a little bit, but they're continuing to rise. That's kind of how I see psychic development, in a sense, is that you can have these, I guess you would call them peak experiences of downloads and orbs and visitation, and then it'll quiet down for a while and you'll just integrate it and maybe do something with it, write a book, learn to be a healer, whatever you're choosing to do. And then boom, it'll spike right back up again. And, I think if we could just help people see and visualize that this is a developmental process. And, you know, having been in the church and, you know, I was an ecumenical campus minister for years, ecumenical chaplain. And I was not only disappointed academically, because I also taught at university, I was disappointed academically that there was no real ufology being taught, but I was very disappointed in religion that, for example, like if you're Episcopalian, there's a contemplative, I'm just picking out a church, that there's a whole contemplative tradition there, and they meet and they have talks and books are written around about it, but they never integrate anything like exoconsciousness in it. It's always this arm's length.
I know.
You know, we're just not ready to go there. But it's so funny, Tony, because in 2005, I taught extraterrestrial reality at Scottsdale Community College. It was one of the first ufology courses in the nation. There was a man teaching at a university in Ohio and a woman over in England. There were like 4 or 5 of us. It was in 2005, so early Facebook times. And we eventually formed this little committee of UFO educators. And man, you know, I thought, you know, by 2010, there's going to be courses all through academia on ufology. And I was basically teaching the history of ufology, also bringing that whole experience or component into it. And then nothing, just absolute silence. And two researchers from University of Louisville, a husband and wife, just did a wonderful survey on the academic perception of ufology. 70% of the tenured faculty, and they went to like 1,400 schools and like, I don't know, 150 different fields. 70% of the tenured faculty that they interviewed said that they would feel ridicule if they taught ufology.
Isn't that funny? Yeah.
Well, it's you have to look. And so, you know, that kind of sent me on a journey of who sourced the suppression.
Yeah.
But, you know, now they can say, blame it on the algorithm. Like, you know, if you're suppressed on X and, you know, no matter how much you post, it never gets anywhere. It's like, yeah, you could say, yeah, that's the algorithm.
But not back then.
Not back then. And not even now, I don't think. I don't even think now it's algorithms. I think it's I think it's larger groups. You know, who knows? Maybe it was the National Institute of Science. Maybe it was the military. Maybe it was Intel. Maybe it was corporations. But someone, some large influential group, decided that it would be a threat to have independent intellectual curiosity and examination of UFOs and ufology.
Yeah, I mean, we've done a bunch of episodes. We've identified it as a courage problem because it's in everything. Yeah. It's in the media. It's in the medical community, the healthcare community. It's in education, in both public and universities, where a lot of the people are like, I don't want to speak the truth or explore this out of curiosity because I might get ridiculed or I might get banned or I might get fired. And so they just keep their head down and they're like, I don't want to rock the boat. I don't want to ruin my education, as if telling the truth about something or having innate inborn curiosity about a topic is going to kill your, I thought people in universities were supposed to be curious. I thought that's the whole point of the Socratic method is to be curious.
And that's
about
the whole point of tenure, that there would be academic freedom. When in fact, obviously there isn't.
Right.
Around this topic anyway.
Oh, and many others that we've talked about as well. You know, I love that you wrote this. You said, quote, are your psychic abilities possible in a transhumanist world, unquote. And you know, and you also said that you felt that exoconsciousness has been birthed or is flowering out of necessity to combat transhumanism. And, you know, I'm so grateful that there is such thing as an innate human and that we are talking about this totally important topic. And it seems to me, and from my vantage point, that there's two tracks. There is the transhumanist track, and then there's the human track. And they seem to be going, the train seems to have left the station for both destinations to me. Like, you're either going with one, and this is, you know, or you're going to be riding the other one. I'm fully on the innate human track in the way that I speak, in my beliefs, in what I put in my body. But you know, there's a lot of doom and gloomers around the transhumanist stuff. Like, they've got us right where they want us. You know, humans we're screwed because, you know, we rely on this technology and they've got us under their thumb. But it's like, wait a minute. We have this amazing innate exoconsciousness, this birth, this divinity within us, that I believe the more that we rely on it, the more we communicate it, talk amongst each other, help one another grow this connection with the divine, however you conceive that, that is going to be the strength of our tribe against, you know, what I believe is a pretty small number of people. They just have a lot of tools and systems that they use to make it seem like the transhumanist vision is inevitable. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. It's like when you look at wars.
Yeah.
A very small number of people start wars. Mm-hmm. Wars are not a movement. They're a select number of people that get together and decide to go to war. And, you know, we're seeing that today, you know, play out. So one of the ways that we approach what you're describing in terms of transhumanism and exoconsciousness, and in the book, I not only juxtapose the concepts of exoconsciousness and transhumanism around certain things like creativity and subjective experience, but I also throughout the book tried to find a common ground. Like, there is some common ground. And I think, you know, we kind of fall into that Hegelian dialectic if we're not careful and we don't and we miss the common ground that we all share. So I'm always, you know, ready and able and on the lookout for who maybe would benefit by learning more about exoconsciousness, and what might I benefit about learning more about transhumanism? And I think that's a more reasonable approach. The other thing that we're doing is we're actually intentionally, as our community, are building a timeline. We're building an alternative timeline. Mm. So every day we're you know, we meet monthly, we meet weekly. It's kind of depends on the different groups, but we're very intentional about this exoconscious timeline and how it's going to advance human consciousness. Because just for your listeners, so transhumanism believes that humans will advance by having electronic and computerized extensions.
Yeah.
To their body, to their world,
brain,
and their brain, and also their whole environment that will have these extensions placed in it. Mm-hmm. And I talk a lot about in the book how, you know, the whole basis of this is cybernetics, and cybernetics is a closed loop. I don't know if probably your listeners have been following what's been going on with ChatGPT and how, AI, that it needs, if AI designs machine learning based on only its own information, that mm-hmm. it actually goes off the rail and creates this nonsensical information. So
yep.
that human input is essential, period, for creativity, because it's a zeros and ones. I don't care if it's a quantum computer. I don't care what kind of computer it is. It's a cybernetics closed loop.
Yep.
And it's never going to be this this amazing creature that is, you know, being propagandized to us. So instead of really worrying about that, I guess we're more concentrating on how can we advance our consciousness? How can we advance our exoconsciousness and become, I would say, galactic citizens, become exoconscious galactic citizens? And we're going to need our psychic abilities to do that.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to move out into the cosmos as a dullard. It's not for the dullards. It's for the psychically attuned people. And that's really why the military, you know, spent so much time and energy on remote viewing and, you know, trying to do magic and, you know, whatever all that, you know, historical researchers are turning up was happening, because they knew that they were moving out into an unknown territory.
Yeah. I love, Rebecca, how the way that you frame that, because rather than say it's this kind of war between transhumanists or AI and humanity, which seems kind of dire and kind of bipolar. You're using the transhumanist movement as a wake up call to activate humanity into more of a cosmic consciousness or more of a galactic perspective. It's actually spurring us to lean on the very attributes and the strengths of our tribe that maybe we've gotten lazy or, well, you know, it's baseball season. So, it's this like dullard kind of like, we've got all the time in the world to wake up and the AI.
Fantasy football season.
Yeah, exactly. And so it gives this kind of like context of like, listen, come on now. Like, do you want this to be the future? Or do you want to have an activated, exoconscious, awake humanity co-creating your future? It's like it puts it in a much more accessible, it makes it an accessible, it's not even a conflict. It's just kind of spurring us to say, wait a minute, what's really important to you? Is it really fantasy football, or would you like to see humanity in the golden age? Like, you know, one has got, you know, is immensely appealing rather than just a distraction. And I think that the way you're framing it is super great that way. Yeah. So this whole thing,
please. A little bit.
Absolutely.
Right here. When I was living in Washington, D.C., I was working with the astronaut, Dr. Edgar Mitchell. We were working on zero point energy and trying to get into the White House. And we connected with Podesta. We wanted to go talk to Obama about zero point energy. And I learned a lot from that phase of my life, the 6 years that I spent in D.C. Mm-hmm. But as I'm there, you know, I would run into people, and I'm real friendly. And so I never forget, one day I was standing outside my yoga class, and I was talking to a woman, and I said, you know, as in DC, you tend to do, oh, where do you work? And she said, she worked for DARPA. And I said, oh, what are you in? And she said, artificial intelligence. And I said, how's it going? And she goes, not well. And I said, oh, is that because you don't know what consciousness is? And she goes, exactly. So, I mean, you know, it's like all this, you know, AI is going to be conscious. You know, I think there's one scholar, I think he's written like the 900 definitions of consciousness so far. You know, it's a term that we just kind of throw around. And yet, you know, you're going to build the world on this AI consciousness. But just to bring things down to reality. So I like the rabbit hole. I'm comfortable there. I've always enjoyed it. And I'm reading a lot. And plus people are just dropping information left and right on me. I mean, for example, I'm living in this apartment complex in Maryland called Avalon, of all things. And there's this big green serpentine building across the street from me. And I'm like, I asked my daughter who's lived there a long time. I'm like, what's that building? She goes, oh, that's the Genome Project. So that was like Craig Vintner's Genome Project was across the street from me, for goodness sakes. I used to walk around it all the time when I was,
oh my God.
You know, but that's just an example of, you know, some of the things that would be kind of information dropped on me from people at DARPA, you know, technology agencies. And
well, you hung out with Edgar Mitchell, the astronaut. I mean, right. he famously was like, I mean, I remember reading in one of the books, you know, just a quote from him basically saying, you know, that we are definitely not alone, you know, and I was like, that's wow, a powerful thing from an right. Apollo astronaut, you know.
And an Apollo astronaut that, quite frankly, went to the Cape every month and checked in.
Yeah.
He was really, he's pushing. He comes in and, you know, he works with us. He works with me. You know, he says, I can always tell I'm having an Edgar moment. But, you know, to be honest with your listeners, all that information that I was getting about transhumanism back in 2015, I mean, that scared the bejeebies out of me.
I bet.
You know, I had children, I had a family, extended family. I'm like, you know, what about the future of my grandchildren and my great grandchildren, my great great grandchildren? Like, what's happening here? Mm-hmm. What's going on? And to be honest, I was so immersed in that knowledge that it really took moving back to Phoenix. Well, Edgar passed away. Mm-hmm. I kind of picked up exoconsciousness again, and my husband and I moved back to Phoenix, and we moved twice. And I think the moves grounded me, you know, pack, unpack. Mm-hmm. And it calmed me down to the point where I could write the book, because before that I couldn't write it. I was just too traumatized.
Yeah.
Like I had looked at a creature that was so vast in transhumanism and had so many just phenomenal aspects to it, mm-hmm. that I was in a sense paralyzed. And even when I wrote the book and I submitted it to this wonderful publisher, Bill Gladstone at Waterside, who's also passed away, but I'll never forget, Bill goes, Rebecca, I'll publish your book. And this is like, it's like 2020, 2021. Mm-hmm. I mean, I knew COVID was coming. I knew chemical biological warfare. I knew all of that was coming. I knew all that was rolling out. And so Bill goes, I'll publish your book, Rebecca, but no one will read it for 3 years. That's it. Well, aren't you a sweetheart?
Yeah.
I'll take the risk.
Totally.
He was right. Bill was right.
Yeah. You know, I got to ask you, like, you hear a lot about disclosure. There's kind of two camps. There's like, oh, there's going to be this huge kind of shocking disclosure, whether that comes from a false flag, you know, where maybe you have a particular faction saying, you know, here's ETs and they're they're not pro-humanity ETs, or, you know, there's a lot of talk about, you know, Project Bluebeam and all that stuff. And then there's also legitimate, you know, collaboration with ETs that seems to run side by side beside any kind of, you know, shenanigans in that area where you might try to scare the crap out of people by showing something or unfolding some sort of event that maybe where the public thinks it's one thing and maybe it's not that. But there's also, like, it seems like right now, there's like a little bit at a time. There's a book and 10 podcasts and then another 3 books and somebody's talking about it. And it seems like the amount of people, you know, I commented on a previous episode that I saw in the New York Post that they said, you know, 1 in 3 Americans believe that we are, that not only are ETs real, but that we're collaborating with them right now, you know? And so you and I are not the only two that have been down some of these rabbit holes. Apparently people are clicking on YouTube videos and exoconsciousness, you know, portals and reading some books that might be like, huh, you know? And so is this, you know, and I was asking somebody about, you know, what does disclosure look like? And they kind of said, well, this is kind of it. You know, I don't know if it's going to be splashed across an emergency broadcast system. I think it might just, humanity gets ready by gradually getting ready, and that we just have this slow, steady build to kind of a exoconsciousness galactic perspective. And it, you know, there might be some big moments, but it might not be as some of the books saying there's going to be some shocking disclosure, and that might not have been the best way to do it. I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
It's an interesting question. So really what you're asking, if I understand it correctly, is, so I studied a lot about artificial intuition. It's a type of AI that was designed playing poker. So it's a little bit more sophisticated than, you know, designing AI to play checkers. Because you have to know what the other person's thinking, in a sense,
right?
When you play poker. And so it's my belief, Tony, that a lot of these scenarios that you just, you know, did a beautiful summary of, have been pushed through artificial intuition, have been pushed through these systems, and they're sort of picking the best way to go about it. You know, the whole ontological, it's going to be an ontological shock.
You know, right, like, right.
Yeah, everything is sensationalized. Well, quite frankly, you know, I don't know. If you like the 50s UFO moments, I'm sure a lot of 14-year-old boys got an ontological shock when they saw this babe come off the craft, you know?
Sure, yeah.
She was always a babe.
Yeah. I like
so,
that.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, you know, today it's scary. It's so scary. It's so scary. You know, it's like, it's just, they're just, you know, playing with your nervous system, quite frankly. Yeah. The thing I worry about, so I see the whole government disclosure as being a very metered, monitored, quite frankly, monetized type of disclosure, where, you know, counter intel agents are, you know, set up with, you know, amazing book deals in New York, and, you know, with book editors and ghostwriters and publicists putting them on every morning show. And, you know, all of a sudden they're just sharing old information. Yeah. And, you know, all of a sudden it's this buildup to sort of prevent, I guess I would go back to independent intellectual curiosity.
Yeah.
So if you believe in critical thinking, which that's another important component of exoconsciousness, along with the integration and the psychic abilities, can you think critically? Can you look backwards and forwards and upside down? And can you look at unintended consequences? So, you know, you need a background of books and research and, you know, good podcasters like you to be able to do that. And, you know, I get increasingly worried, because the other day a friend of mine called me and she said, who was the owl in the aviary? You know, the aviary?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And she says, who was the, and so it's a group of men that gave each other names of birds, penguin and owl, yeah, and I don't know, hawk or whatever. Mm-hmm. Anyway, and I said, oh, I don't know. You know, I can kind of guess, but I don't really know. And I know that Bob Wood, who just recently died, did a lot of that work on aviary. And I said, well, let me look up Bob Wood and, you know, his son, Ryan, yeah, Bob and Ryan Wood. And I'll get the list of aviary. Tony, I went on the internet. It's scraped.
Really?
Gone.
Gone.
Gone. I mean, if you dug around probably in the archive or whatever, you knew exactly the right website to go to, would it be there? Yeah, probably. But, you know, most people don't have Grant Cameron's phone number to dial him up and ask him. Yeah, it's gone. I mean, I look at different resource references that I had in my books, and they're gone. They're not there anymore. So you're looking at, you know, we talk a lot about shadow banning, censorship. That's how they're going to do disclosure. It's shadow banning, censorship. You know, it's kind of like, well, I asked Alexa, you know, this question and this answer came back, but I don't think it's right. It's like, that's how they're working on disclosure right now. And, you know, it's all led by Intel, military, and that sort of thing. We're just a really different, I mean, that's one perspective, I suppose. But we're just another perspective. We're building a different timeline, and we're building a different approach and perspective, even to the extent to go into outer space and work with people that are one of the books you probably didn't notice that I wrote was called How Exoconscious Humans Guide Our Spacefaring Future. And I wrote it when I worked with Edgar, because I was bumping up against all of these scientists and, you know, people that worked in space, corporate space or whatever. They didn't know anything. They didn't have any background. And so I just put together this ebook about, you know, here's a brief history of ufology that you can sit down and read in an evening. And also up front in the book, I made the argument for, and this is why you need exoconscious humans to work on these, you know, types of pioneering efforts. Because if you're in outer space and your computers break, well, you better know a little telepathy. I mean, Edgar Mitchell did telepathy in space. So, you know, with the telepathy cards, and that someone in Chicago, and did it very successfully. And, you know, if you're in outer space, you may want to have some experience in missing time. So, you know, exoconscious humans, you know, we've lived through different dimensions of time, and we're very comfortable with it. And it doesn't scare us. I mean, if you're in outer space, maybe you'd be who viewed to be with somebody that was psychically attuned. So, you know, they're talking about the astronauts and, you know, stuck in the space shuttle and whatever's going on there. And all of a sudden, you know, sounds appeared in the space shuttle. Well, you know, if you don't have your wits about you, you don't have any psychic intelligence, things are going to happen in space. And you need to have a sophisticated, psychically intelligent group of people. Do they need to know math? And maybe they, you know, like Edgar, or like a Navy flight test pilot. Sure. Yeah. You need all that. You need physics, but you also need psychic abilities and to navigate space. And not only that, but to work with other beings that you might encounter.
Right.
You know, you're not going to put the flag in the sand and say, we own it. No, you know, that doesn't work. We're going into an entirely different type of exploration at this point.
Well, and what you said, Rebecca, about how Google and big tech, how they shadow ban and scrub subject matter that they don't want you, their AI, their algorithms scrubbing things so that you don't find it. It's even going to be more important to have your intuition and your psychic abilities develop, because you're not going to find the answers you're looking for. I mean, yeah, there's rabbit holes, and those hopefully will be preserved in different platforms that are popping up that are more, say, decentralized or independent, so that those and I do think that the invention of the blockchain and Bitcoin helps preserve a record. I've been saying this for a long time. I'm a big Bitcoiner. It's Bitcoin. Uh-huh. Yes, it's a store of value, but it's also an impeccable record of whatever you want to record that is validated for accuracy every 10 minutes, and it can't be corrupted. And I think that as we build the next chapters of our human history, we need incorruptible ways to record what we've done, where we've been, who we're interacting with, without a centralized corrupt entity saying, we don't want humans to spread that message, right? So, So, but I wanted to finish with just asking you, it's been great, by the way. I just love talking to you. I think,
thank you.
I think we could do another episode and have it be a little bit different, actually, with some of the things that we briefly touched on. But what's your vision of the exoconsciousness field? What are people working on, maybe that's exciting in your eyes? And then also, where can people find you, and how do they work with you?
Hey, thank you. Right now, a lot of my work is around building community. So communities, building communities, I guess you would even say. I have a coaching group that meets weekly, and they are incredible. I mean, they've been together for 2 years now, and they're co-creating amazing consciousness technology, healing modalities, art, science. I mean, that just goes to show that when you believe that, you know, there's knowledge beyond the brain that you can tap into, and they start getting these downloads, that's the result that you have. So I also have a monthly group that meets, and I have a Substack called Exoconscious Humans, or it's under my name, Rebecca Hardcastle Wright, on Substack. It's a newsletter, but for $8 a month, you can join our monthly coaching. We have it on the third Saturday of the month, every month. And two people came new the other day, and they were very experienced, and they left and they went, wow, this is a really deep group. And I said, yeah, this is a deep group. So we're working with that. And so Substack, and also we have a YouTube channel, Exoconscious Humans YouTube, that Dan Brock produces for us. And we just talked about one of the spiritual consciousness inventions, technology inventions that one of our members just invented. We went into that in depth. We talked to like different academics like Rudy Shield, and we also interview experiencers, so you can hear what other experiencers have to say. We're also working on, I guess you would call it at this point, an initiative where I believe that one of the most important things that exoconscious humans need to do is they need to learn as a group to feel safe and to feel confident in their experience, and then begin to use their voice and speak up and co-create and share with each other what it is that they're co-creating, because it's so, so important. And one of the things we're doing is kind of a planetary constitution that we're working on that, as we kind of open the show, talks about what is natural human consciousness, and why do we need to preserve it and make it important. So most of all that is on my website, exoconsciousness.com. And you can get to all that information there. So, and also I uploaded for free, if people want to join for free, academia.edu. I've got, I think I like 11 papers up there, along with my books that I've uploaded and shared with people. So it's just getting the information out. And I really appreciate this opportunity to share with your listeners. And I welcome them to exoconsciousness.
Absolutely. Well, Rebecca, thanks so much for coming on Basecamp for Men and taking time. It's just great. You're doing beautiful work. Appreciate what you're doing out there. Really courageous, but also really skilled and intuitive. And you're modeling that path really beautifully. So we just thank you for your time and the work that you're doing to benefit humanity, because it is benefiting us greatly.
Well, I have to thank, you know, Ruth Hover, Edgar Mitchell, John Mack. They were, you know, really influential mentors for me that put me on this path. My good friend, Lynn Kitai, that does Phoenix Lights. I mean, just an amazing group of people that have helped me along the way. So beautiful. It's a community. It's community-based. It we're like a blockchain.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Thanks, Rebecca. Really appreciate it.
Yep. Thanks, Tony.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. My final thought, well, if the globalists want to normalize things like a dystopian, transhumanist, AI-driven future, then we can normalize exoconsciousness with its honoring and strengthening of our innate humanity, a deepening connection to God and the divine, as well as our flowering intuition and psychic abilities. Don't you agree? Thank you, Base Campers, and we'll see you around the fire next week. If you find value in our show and wish to show us some love, we are now making that very easy to do. You simply go to www.basecampformen.com and click on Donate Support Basecamp. You'll find an easy way to make either monthly donations for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate just once. We love the monthly donation and hope to build this up over the coming months, but any show of support is greatly appreciated, honestly. Thank you for your support and for helping keep Basecamp as a resource on your hero's journey. Good luck in all your endeavors. And good luck on your hero's journey. This is Tony Rezac, and you're listening to Basecamp for Men.